Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today we'll hear the second of two special programs presenting debates between the candidates running for nomination to the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District in the primary election on Tuesday, May 15th. On today's program, a debate between the four Republican candidates who had filed for the office at the time the debate invitations were extended. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, April 20th, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the candidates and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. The participants in today's debate will be the former chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party and president of the Omaha Chapter Freedoms Foundation, Glenn Freeman, chairman of the Department of Mathematics at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and elected member of the Learning Community Coordinating Council, Jack Heidel, the current congressman from Nebraska's 2nd District, seeking his 7th term in the House of Representatives, Lee Terry, and Omaha financial advisor and former football player for the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, Brett Lindstrom. Here now to introduce the candidates is Gary Kerr, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Gary Kerr, chairman of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee. The Press Club sponsors monthly noon forums, which are open to the public. And today our noon forum is co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha and the Press Club. It is a debate between four Republicans running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. The winner in the May primary will go on to face the winner of the Democratic primary in the November general election. Now, each candidate will get 1 minute and 30-second opening statements, 1 minute to respond to each question, and 30 seconds of rebuttal time with regard to each question. The candidates will be timed. Please turn off your cell phones, other electronic devices. Please no applause, cheering, hooting, etc. during the debate itself. But you can do that now as we invite the candidates to the podiums. Please welcome Jack Heidel, Glenn Freeman, Lee Terry, and Brett Lindstrom. We drew from a hat to determine the order of the opening statements, and we begin with Brett Lindstrom, followed by Lee Terry, Jack Heidel, and Glenn Freeman. So, Brett Lindstrom, you're up first.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Brett Lindstrom. I'm a lifelong Nebraskan. I grew up in Millard and graduated from Millard West High School. I had the opportunity to follow in my father's footsteps and his two brothers and play football down at the University of Nebraska. I'm a father and a husband, and my wife's here today. Welcome, Lee. And I'm a financial advisor by trade, and I've been working with a lot of retirees and people who are about to retire, and they're fearful of their future for their kids and grandkids. And I'm fearful as well, and that's why I got in this race. And I take issue with some of the bills that Congressman Terry has voted on the last couple years, whether it was the bailout of the banks in 2008 in the tune of $700 billion, and the debt increase of $2 trillion, which downgraded us for the first time in American history. Unlike one of my opponents, Jack Heidel, I'm not pro-choice. I'm 100% pro-life. And I would not vote for H.R. 3 or H.R. 358, which did give federal funds to Planned Parenthood. One of the things I'll fight on your behalf would be Social Security and maintaining that for future generations. Politicians have been raiding that for years, and we need to get that out of the general fund so that we can have that for our future generations. I would be willing to do that. If you're going to change the problems and fix the problems in this country, you're going to have to change the problem solvers. I'm willing to fight on your behalf, and I appreciate your vote May 15th. Thank you.
Lee Terry, you're opening.
Thank you, and I'm worried about our future as a country. But I have confidence in the people of the United States that will rise up above this economic situation of the day. But Congress can help to assure future generations that they'll have an equal opportunity to prosper. But we've got to do certain things, like quit spending money we don't have. That's why I have voted 157 times just in the last 3 years to decrease spending that would have totaled $7 trillion. I think we need to balance the budget. That's why I led an effort to balance the budget, to have a balanced budget amendment. But that failed on a partisan vote. I think to make our American businesses more competitive in a global environment, we need to have a tax code that allows them to be competitive, and that's why I have voted for a flatter, simpler tax, removing all of the special interest tax breaks. Now, I think the crux, the foundational piece of a growing economy has to be energy. Using our own natural resources in the United States will create millions of jobs, keep $1 billion a day in the United States that we send overseas. The issue is, do we have the will to do this? That's where I fought this administration on energy and Obamacare and his spending, and I'll keep fighting for the people.
Jack Heidel, your opening statement.
The greatest threat to our national security is not some terrorist in a cave in Afghanistan. Rather, it is our own fiscal irresponsibility. These are the words of Mr. David Walker, the former Comptroller General of the United States and the CEO of Comeback America. When Mr. Terry first went to Congress in 1999, the national debt was $6 trillion. Now it is over $15 trillion and growing rapidly. Our national leaders have mortgaged the future of our country. You and I and our children will be paying interest on this huge debt forever. As a result, it will be difficult to find the funds we need for other pressing problems. Mr. Terry has been in office during the buildup of this enormous debt and therefore lacks credibility when he says that he is opposed to deficit spending. He is part of the problem and needs to be replaced. This is why I am a candidate for Congress. I am a non-ideological fiscal conservative, totally focused on eliminating the deficit. Send me to Congress, and I can and will work with others in both political parties to accomplish this urgent task.
Glenn Freeman, your opening statement.
First of all, let me thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to listen very carefully to what is being said here today. You heard it 14 years ago, the same thing. You heard it then. We have one problem in this country, just one. We have many, many issues. The problem that we have is not God-made, but man-made. The problem that we have is we elect individuals who come and tell us that they're going to do all kind of things for us. But what they don't tell you and what they should do is support the Constitution. All of the issues that you have today, whether it be taxes, debt and the deficit, immigration, whatever, it is because Congress has not done its job. Now, we can go on and keep kicking the can down the road. We can let us politicians come to you every 2 years and tell us what they're going to do for us. But I want you to know they cannot do anything for you if they do not support the Constitution. I am not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. I am a constitutionalist. I want you to remember that, and I want you to listen very carefully because you heard this song 14 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn Freeman. Let's go to our individual questions now, and our questions were prepared by a committee of the Press Club and the League of Women Voters, and the candidates have not seen them in advance. Glenn Freeman, the first question goes to you first. And, you know, I'm going to make some assumptions with regard to several questions, and if I'm wrong, I know you're going to let me know. I assume that all of you believe our deficit and debt problem should be fixed without any tax increases of any kind. Many experts believe that to achieve the debt reduction goal by relying only on spending cuts will require draconian cuts to many programs. Some government programs may have to be eliminated entirely. If you believe this is the proper course, what programs, departments, et cetera, would you cut? And please be very specific. And Glenn Freeman, you first, and then it's Jack Heidel, Lee Terry, and Brett Lindstrom.
What I would do, first of all, is take the Constitution and look at Article 1, Section 1, Paragraph 8. And it tells you the things that the federal government should be doing. So I can stand here and name some, but it's not all inclusive. But I can give Department of Education, Department of Energy, Urban Housing and Urban Development. All of those should be gotten rid of, every single one of them. But there are many, many more, many, many more. But the way to do it is take the Constitution, see what the Constitution said the federal government should be doing. And if the federal government is not doing it, stop it.
Jack Heidel.
First of all, to eliminate the deficit, we need to reform the budget process and get away from so-called baseline budgeting, whereby the budgets of every department go up by 3 or 4% every year. Just have a level it off. We start over each year and decide what programs need more money or less money, and so we have a flat field in that respect. Then, after reforming the budget process, I suggest, propose that we actually cut every single federal department by 10%, at least 10%. And this, in other words, this is in the, well, partly to be fair and not pick on any particular program or department, but to simply ask all the departments, the big departments, defense, agriculture, energy, education, and so on, to figure out what their priorities are and, you know, decide what's more important and less important and get by with 10% smaller budget on in real dollars. And so this would be a huge step in the direction of eliminating the deficit.
Lee Terry.
Thank you. This is a really important issue in which one areas that you're going to cut. I have voted to reduce all of what we call our discretionary budget by at least 10%. In fact, we have an agreement to do 9%, and we're working to better that. The reality is 66% of our budget is three programs. They're entitlement programs. You can't just cut those, but you can reform them. In both the last year's budget and this year's budget, the same budget that Mr. Lindstrom has said that he would vote against offered real reforms to the Social Security, I'm sorry, to Medicare and Medicaid that would have saved trillions over 10 years. Those are the type of reforms that we need to make with in the entitlement programs. The budget that I voted for reformed it to a defined benefit program. It also means tested it, and these are the type of reforms that we need to look at.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, obviously, if you've been following the news, the GSA could make a few cuts. but, you know, looking at the scope and the magnitude of what we're in right now, we have $15.6 trillion in climbing. And certainly Congressman Terry has been there since 1999, and we had a balanced budget back in that time. I believe in giving the departments the ability to make those cuts, the heads of those departments. They know where the fat is. They know where to cut it. Yes, specifically which department I would cut. I believe education is one place we can look. Getting those dollars back to the local level so that parents, teachers, and local government entities can make better decisions for our students rather than a bureaucracy and a government. You start a dollar at the federal level, it has to go through different layers, and by the time it reaches that student, there's basically nothing left.
Now, we've got 30-second rebuttal times for each candidate, so let's do that. And Glenn Freeman, we start with you again.
Yeah, I want to say that what has happened is typical politician answer to you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order for us to control this debt and deficit, it is going to hurt someone. And I don't know why you mean do it at equal or no one. It is going to hurt everyone. Everyone has got to contribute. Everyone has got to sacrifice for it. There's no other way to doing it. You can try to kick it down the road if you want to. But the only way to solve it, acknowledge the fact, yes, it's going to hurt.
Jack Heidel.
I agree with the statement that we're not going to be able to balance the budget, eliminate the deficit, just by cutting spending alone. And let me just make a quick reference to the fact that the next thing we need to do, or in addition to cutting spending, we need to reform the tax code and do it in a way that we get the lowest possible overall tax rates, taxing all income, whether it be wage or investment, at the same rate, the same low rate, by eliminating deductions. And this would give the economy a big boost and thereby produce more revenue, which will help eliminate the deficit.
Lee Terry.
Well, I disagree with Mr. Freeman in the sense that getting rid of Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid will be the answer here. Reforms are the answer, but also growing the economy. So going to a flat and simpler tax that allows businesses to just expand will bring more revenues in. Allowing the trillions of dollars that are sitting overseas come back in, four times what the stimulus program of the president that I fought against. Real private sector dollars, that will increase revenues because it increases tax, or not increase taxes, but revenues by way of economic development.
Brett Lindstrom?
Well, we have a spending problem in this country, not a revenue problem. And the budget that Congressman Terry was alluded to was 40 years out. I think we can do it faster. We need to do it faster. If not, we're in trouble. One of the things I'd like to work on is reforming the corporate tax code, currently at 35%, one of the highest in the world globally. To be competitive as far as the domestic nations, we need to be at or below 18.1% and get rid of the repatriation taxes so that multinational companies that are sending jobs and money overseas bring that money back and use it domestically.
All right, next question is Jack Heidel. You're going to get this first, followed by Lee Terry, Brett Lindstrom, and Glenn Freeman. Good question. Again, an assumption. I'm assuming that all of you would describe yourselves as conservative Republicans, but there's conservative, and then there's conservative, as in Tea Party conservative. Please describe yourselves as you relate to the Tea Party movement. Jack Heidel?
I'm a fiscal conservative. My focus is to eliminate the deficit, and I'm sympathetic to the Tea Party. In other words, the Tea Party agrees with me, or I agree with them. We agreed with each other on eliminating the deficit by cutting spending, to start doing that by cutting spending. I don't agree with everything that they stand for. In particular, they support a fair tax, which is a national sales tax. I'm not in favor of that at the present time, although I'm willing to consider it. I think a reform of the income tax would be the best way to lower the tax rates. And with a uniform, having a uniform tax rate, all types of income being taxed the same. So anyway, I have many things in common with the Tea Party, but I have differences with them as well.
Lee Terry.
Three of the basic principles of the Tea Party movement I agree with. It's get the budget under control. Quit spending money you don't have. Make the reforms that make this an effective and efficient government that's responsible to the people. It's about embracing the private sector, unleashing them to the entrepreneurial spirit in this country that's being crushed by this administration. And it's about trusting the individuals to make their own choices for themselves instead of government. Those are the three basic premises of this movement. And those are the three things that are fundamental to my core beliefs, my philosophical, political philosophy.
Bert Lindstrom?
Well, I'm sympathetic to the Tea Party and what they stand for and what used to be the Republican Party as far as getting rid of or getting less government and less government out of your life, or more government out of your life. I consider myself a conservative first, Republican second. As far as the Tea Party, if you've ever seen the Tea Party flag or the Don't Tread on Me flag, you see the snake all broken up into different bits, and each one of those bits represents a different piece. And that's really what the Tea Party is about. One person takes on this issue, one person takes on this issue, and there might be a group of 10. Like I said, I'm a conservative first, Republican second, sympathetic to what the Tea Party stands for as far as getting the government out of our lives.
Glenn Freeman.
Okay, on my first answer, my prior answer to Mr. Terry miscategorized what I said. I didn't mention Medicare or Medicaid, so he was wrong in that. As far as the Tea Party is concerned, is that they have a right to petition the government for grievances. I have no problem with that. And to describe myself as a conservative Republican, that's wrong. And I've said it before. I'm a Republican, but I'm a constitutionalist.
Time now for 30-second rebuttals. Jack Heidel.
The Tea Party has a lot of things. They have a lot of good ideas, and they're making changes. For example, there were 87 new Republicans elected to the House last time with Tea Party support, and those 87 are making a difference. We need more new people in Congress, more reform-minded people, more people who are fiscal conservatives to get the job done, but the Tea Party people are making a good start.
Lee Terry.
Well, I think we need more people in Congress that share the same principles as the Tea Party and trusting the individual and capitalism and good government. I want to mention the budget. The budget that Mr. Lindstrom just criticized me for voting yes had the support of the Tea Party. Most of the Tea Party people voted for it. So I don't know why you would stand with Nancy Pelosi and Henry Waxman and call yourself a conservative.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, Congressman Terry, it goes back to the 40 years. It's too far. We can make cuts now. We need to make cuts now. And what you saw in 2010 was the Tea Party rise. And people want government out of their lives. And you're going to see that happen not only in 2010, but you're going to see it in 2012.
Glenn Freeman.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to listen to what Mr. Terry has to say. Now, he can maybe do Lindstrom like that, but he can't do me like that. So he's got to quote. If he's going to quote me, he's got to say what I said.
All right.
I want you to listen to this, because this is the old Washington trick that's not going to work with Glenn Freeman.
Next question. This goes to Lee Terry first, then Brett Lindstrom, then Glenn Freeman, and then Jack Heidel. Congress has less than a 10% approval rating with the American people. Several members of Congress have declined to run this year because of what they see as an uncompromising atmosphere within the House and Senate. Without slamming the Democrats, that's a tough part, name two ways you would actively promote compromise if elected, Lee Terry.
Well, two thoughts there. One is we're engaged in a battle to change the culture of spending in Washington, D.C. A friend of mine analogized this to two people trying to roll a rock from opposite sides. There's going to be tension when that occurs. I'm on the side to reduce spending, and we're fighting in a long-time established culture of spending. This president, in every one of his maneuvers, has tried to spend more money and increase taxes. So it's not going to look pretty when you're changing culture, but we need to do it. Beneath that level, which is a justified battle to have, I have a record of working with the other side. I've passed low-power FM radio and other XL pipeline with the help of Democrats. So I do engage in the culture of working across the aisle.
Brett Lindstrom.
I believe Congress had an approval rating one time at 9%. That's just a few years back. I think it's hovering around 12% now. But that being said, going back to my original statement of reforming the corporate tax code, one thing that I can agree with President Obama and the Democrats and working across the aisle is getting rid of the corporate deductions and closing the corporate loopholes that are involved. GE, such as GE, doesn't pay very much tax. So we need to close that in, but in conjunction with lowering that corporate tax rate so that we are competitive globally. And that's where Democrats and Republicans, I think, can agree on.
Glenn Freeman.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to commend you for being here today, because if I was in your shoes, I'm not sure I'd be here. The incumbent told you that if he got elected, he would only serve three terms. Now he's running for his eighth term. So you say, why we have a 10% rating? We have a 10% rating in Congress because we are liars. We have no integrity. We have no honor. So I'm surprised. I go door to door, and people tell me, why should I vote? It makes no difference. And you are right. It makes no difference. We get elected, we go to Washington, and we ignore you. We think you are smart enough to elect us and dumb enough to reelect us.
Jack Heidel.
Mr. Terry, on his website, claims that he has voted over 150 times to reduce the deficit, and he repeated that today. I would like to point out two ways recently, when he has made recent votes to increase the deficit. One of them is for the payroll tax holiday, the 2% payroll tax holiday, which got a two-month extension in December, and then extended for a full year in March. Mr. Terry voted in favor of the two-month extension. He did vote against the full year extension. However, the two-month extension set the stage, and once that two-month extension of the payroll tax holiday was passed, then the die was cast, and it was inevitable that the full year extension would be approved. That's a $120 billion deficit, addition to the deficit. So that's huge. And also on the Highway Trust Fund reauthorization, that's adding $13 billion to the deficit. Mr. Terry voted for the three-month extension of that.
30-second rebuttals, Lee Terry.
Yeah, Mr. Heidel's superficial review failed to mention that in the one time that I voted for that extension, that was completely set off. So there was zero impact on the deficit. It was paid for. Same thing with the transportation. It was only renewed at the level of which the transportation funds are coming in. So that didn't add to the deficit. And That's one of the fights we're having with Harry Reid in the Senate, is on the transportation bill, because he wants to deficit spend on it, and we're trying to stop it.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, to Glenn's point, I do believe you can go to Washington to make a difference, but you have to send the right people. And I believe that you need to send people with private sector experience, which I have, in a finance background. I think that bodes well for the problems that we're facing right now. Not career politicians, not politicians who said they would only serve three terms and now going in on their eighth, been there for 13 years. We need to send private sector people that understand how to get the economy back and working.
Glenn Freeman.
Ladies and gentlemen, going to Washington with good intentions is not enough. If you do not have the skill and the ability to affect change, you're not going anywhere. You're not doing anything at all. So along with having good intentions, you must have the skill and the ability to affect change.
Jack Heidel.
Mr. Terry referred to the fact that for the payroll tax extension, it was paid for, that $120 billion addition to the deficit. It was paid for supposedly over 10 years. If you spend $120 billion in 1 year and you're paying for it over 10 years, you're not paying for it, and you don't have to be a mathematician to figure that out. For one thing, you're only paying for a tenth of it, and for the other thing, you can't bind future Congresses to live up to the bargain.
But you do need to be accurate.
Next question. And this, Brett Lindstrom, you'll be first on this, then Glenn Freeman, Jack Heidel, and Lee Terry. Numerous studies have shown that American schools do not measure up to many other industrialized countries in educating children, especially in math and science. What could the federal government do to improve public education in the United States, Brett Lindstrom?
Well, in my original comments, I said that getting it out of the federal government would be one of the first steps. And you're right. Out of the OECD countries, or the 30 developed countries, we measure 21st and 25th in math and science. So definitely we're not going down the right path. And it goes back to having it at the federal level. Those dollars do not get back to the individual and the students, and we need to have more local people get involved in teachers and students who can make better decisions for the children in this country.
Glenn Freeman.
Department of Education was started because of political promise by Carter. The federal government can do nothing to improve education. They haven't done it. They can do nothing to do it. Education goes to the states, goes to the local communities, but first of all, the parents have to get more involved. There's no point in the parents getting involved if Big Brother in Washington is telling them what to do. So the federal government can do nothing for education. They should get out of it. They have nothing to do with it, and they certainly, certainly can't improve it.
Jack Heidel?
I have an education program which is related to and fits in with my interest in eliminating the deficit. The Department of Education has a budget of about $70 billion a year. Within the for just elementary and secondary education alone, there are 100 different programs within the Department of Education. That means that districts and states have to apply separately for 100 up to 100 different programs to get the money from the federal government. What I think we should do is take all these programs, combine them into one giant pot of money, consolidate them all into one program, and give the money back to the states as block grants, and cut the amount of money by 20%. In other words, we'd make big budget savings, and we would give the states the flexibility and freedom to develop their own programs to improve education, and we'd have experiments going on in 50 different states, and we'd find out what works best and what works less than best, and we'd make progress in education.
Lee Terry?
The reality is that even with OPS, who has the most Title I students in the entire state in one school district, only about 8%, maybe 8.5%, are federal funds. But it's almost 100% of the rules and regulations that fill the TAC building trying to comply with. So obviously it will help education to cut those strings. The federal government shouldn't be regulating the Millard School Districts or the Omaha Public School Districts. Let the money flow to the Title I schools that are in the Title I programs, but quit trying to run our schools. Cut the ties. Parents have to be involved. And when you look at the best school districts, they're the school districts that encourage parental involvement. Even in Omaha Public Schools, when you look at the best individual schools, are the ones where they invite the parents into the schools. We see too many of our schools locally that keep parents out. They don't want parents to know. That's when they're unaccountable and our education degrades.
I think everybody is kind of in of the same mind on this question, but we do have built-in 30-second responses, so we're going to go forward with that. Brett Lindstrom, you're first.
Well, like you said, I think we agree on that one. So I don't know if I, you know, I was glad to see that Glenn and I can agree on something here. So,
Glenn Freeman.
I'm a teacher. I teach three homeschool classes. I have two here in Omaha and one in Lincoln. Some of my students have gone on to military academy. As a matter of fact, I have one lady now that's in Hillsdale College. Next Sunday, I'm going to the graduation of one of my students. There's a complete difference in homeschool children and they are in public school system. And it's because of the government bureaucracy.
Jack Heidel?
I'm a member of the Learning Community Coordinating Council in Douglas and Sarpy County. I campaigned for that office in both 2008 and 2010. And one thing I heard more about probably than anything else was how unpopular No Child Left Behind is, especially amongst teachers, but amongst lots of other people too. And my proposal to consolidate all of these 100 federal programs into one giant program, give the money back to the states, would be a replacement for No Child Left Behind, which is now hasn't yet been renewed.
Lee Terry.
Yeah, well, No Child Left Behind, I think, is a good symbol of the overreach of the federal government. That bill was actually intended to make schools accountable, but yet give the power to the local school districts and the state board to decide the tests. But yet the Department of Education decided they were not going to allow any local or state control and started dictating what tests Nebraska was supposed to do. So No Child Left Behind has become a symbol to me of bureaucracy gone bad and needs to be eliminated.
This next question has to do with super PACs. The order is Glenn Freeman, Jack Heidel, Lee Terry, and Brett Lindstrom. A 5-4 Supreme Court ruling enables corporations, unions, and individuals to contribute unlimited amounts of money to so-called super PACs that then support candidates. A Washington Post ABC poll found that 69% of the public believe super PACs should be illegal. There is room for legislation that would require donors to promptly reveal the source of contributions, so at least the public can see the connections between super PACs and candidates before the election. Would you support such legislation, Glenn Freeman?
Yeah, the Supreme Court was wrong when they ruled that equated money with freedom of speech. They were wrong then, they're wrong now. Because we, the public, if we accept that fact, then the average billionaire has more speech than I do. So we have to go back from the very beginning. You cannot equate contributions, the money you give a campaign, to freedom of speech. That's where the problem lies, ladies and gentlemen. Now, as I talk to you here, I'm going to give you the reason why we have the problem and give you the answer. I'm not going to give you the political Washington speech here, so you won't get that from me. The problem is when the Supreme Court ruled that money equates to freedom of speech, that's where the problem lies.
Jack Heidel?
We can't keep money out of politics. And the question is, how do we make sure that it's transparent and visible what's going on? And so I support such a legislation to promptly reveal all funding for super PACs. Now, I think we also should expand the amount of money that people can give to directly to political campaigns, because it's because of that limitation that super PACs got started in the first place. So let's make sure that everything is completely transparent in a prompt way as possible.
Lee Terry?
Yeah, this is a new territory we're entering with super PACs, and boy, I got to admit to you, it makes me really uneasy. But free speech is the underlying premise here. It is the First Amendment to our Constitution, and there is nothing more protected in the Constitution than the right to express your political opinions. That's the most scrutinized, the most important. And if you can stand up and support a cause and support an individual for running, that's political speech and the most protected. So the Supreme Court was right in determining that your right to speak politically should be protected. And in that, there has to be reasonable controls and restrictions on dollars. I support opening it up, but having full disclosure. Full disclosure, immediate disclosure. That sunshine is the best disinfectant.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, I believe in upholding the Supreme Court's law to have the super PACs. You know, touching on Jack's point, we are limited individually on how much we can give. I think we do need to open that up quite a bit. And going based on transparency, we need to see who has their hand in the pot of these politicians and who is controlling these people. Because they talk about, even when we talk about the Republican side, talk about the Koch brothers, you talk about on the Democratic side, you have a litany of people. But we need to have transparency in those super PACs so we can see why the decisions are being made the way they are.
30-second responses. Glenn Freeman.
The idea that the Supreme Court can equate money with freedom of speech is ludicrous. Super PACs are what you call factions. And factions are spoke of if these people are only interested in their very local interests. So this country was formed by the people. We the people. Not we the PACs. Not we any particular faction. It's you. So when you let these factions gather together, they override what you as an individual want.
Jack Heidel.
I'm afraid I have to disagree with Mr. Freeman on this. Freedom of speech and spending money are really closely related. Transparency and visibility are the keys in keeping the political process and money in the political process as clean as possible.
Lee Terry.
I personally like the idea that people that are pro-life or pro-whatever can send their $25 in to the organization and know that it's going to make a difference in getting the message out through advertising or advocacy. I think that empowers people when they can band together. I surely don't want to restrict their abilities to do that.
Well, I agree. It empowers the individual that might not have as much money. If you don't allow that, what's going to happen is you're going to have just rich people running for office, and they're going to be dictating the law of the land, which isn't good for the individual and the free speech of the individual citizen.
Next question. The order is Jack Heidel, Lee Terry, Brett Lindstrom, and Glenn Freeman. If you believe our tax code needs refining, explain what measures you would promote to make that happen, Jack Heidel.
Well, I'm in favor of broad-based tax reform, of a very extensive reform. I think that all types of income should be taxed at the same level, wages, investment income, i.e. dividends and capital gains, and business income. Let's tax them all at the same uniform rate. Remove, ideally, all deductions to bring that rate down absolutely as low as we can, to the lowest possible uniform rate that would apply to everything. This would be a huge stimulus to the economy. And let's also make it a flat tax. In other words, this would mean that we're going to be raising, right now, investment and dividend and capital gain income, capital gains are taxed at 15%. They would go up to somewhere in the low 20s if we have this uniform rate in the middle. They'll go up. But if we have a flat tax, then we'll keep those rates as low as possible. It will be transparent and fair. And the best thing we can do to stimulate the economy.
Lee Terry.
Yeah, I really believe, and I've touted the flat tax. Well, I first got on that with Ronald Reagan back in 1980, the first president I could vote for, and supported him in Nebraska. I thought he was right then, and I think he's right now. That's why in the Ryan budget that Mr. Lindstrom would voted against, standing with Nancy Pelosi on that. The provision in there was to go to a flat tax, a 10% and a 25%, both corporate and individual, and removing most of the deductions. Now, all of the deductions hadn't been, but I would have supported keeping the mortgage interest in the individuals. But even here in Nebraska, we have companies here, major employers, that are paying a full 35% corporate tax because they don't get the special breaks that have been passed by Congress over the last 40, 50 years. But yet a company like GE pays zero. And so I think we have to go to a system that's absolutely fairer and treats everyone equal.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, certainly we need to reform the individual tax rate in this country. Currently, 46% of people do not pay taxes. And when that happens, it jeopardizes things like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And just touching on unemployment, we have close to 20% unemployment when you talk about people who are underworked, who have given up work, and people just the people who continue to look. We're 8.2% in that regard. So we need to reform the corporate tax code so that we are competitive globally and we get people back to work so we can then facilitate the likes of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And going back to getting the individual, everybody needs to have skin in the game.
Glenn Freeman?
Amendment 16 to the Constitution is unconstitutional. Clearly, it should be done away with. What I recommend is a sales tax, a national sales tax. If you buy it, you pay it. If you don't buy it, you don't pay it. What Mr. Terry didn't tell you is that 10% is on the first $100,000. After you get over $100,000, it goes to 25%. So before you take your kids to the movie, the government is going to take one-fourth of your salary, just flat off the top, right flat off the top. The only tax that you should have that is constitutional is a national sales tax. You buy it, you pay it. If you don't buy it, you don't pay it.
30-second responses. Jack Heidel?
Mr. Terry advocated taxing more fairly and equal, taxing everybody more fairly and equal. That's a great idea, but the best way to do that is to have a single uniform tax rate for all types of income. This is the fairest way of all, in the most equal way, and it makes things simple and transparent. It will bring the tax rate down as low as possible. If we remove all deductions, ideally, and that's the best way to get the job done.
Lee Terry?
Agree with him. That's having the flatter, simpler, fairer is absolutely the best way to do this. I want to point one thing out. We talk about capital gains. What a lot of people don't know is if Obamacare is not repealed, there is a capital gains tax on all income or gains over $250,000, that's an additional 3.8 on top of the fact that the president wants to have it go back up to 25%. So there's a lot of issues within our tax code we need to deal with.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, I think we can simplify the capital gains tax. Currently, right now, the long-term capital gains at 15%. If you're over a year, it's at your individual corporate tax rate. We have a lot of clients, or I have a lot of clients, who will not trade. You know, in Omaha, we have people that have had Berkshire for 30-plus years that simply won't trade it because they have high capital gains tax. So I think if we lessen that, you're going to see a lot more turnover inside of people's accounts and then generates more money for the federal government.
Glenn Freeman.
You notice the other three individuals here don't care anything about the 16th Amendment being unconstitutional. What Mr. Terry didn't tell you also is the way the Ryan Plan, and he said that reflects his ideals, the way the Ryan Plan makes up their money, and no one has told you this, they're going to raid the railroad retirement fund.
Oh,
that's what they're going
true.
To do. They're going to raid that money. They're going to do that the same way they did Social Security, same identical way.
Next question. Obamacare has been referred to, and that's where we're going with this next question. And the order on it is Lee Terry, Brett Lindstrom, Glenn Freeman, and Jack Heidel. I assume another assumption that all of you believe the new health care law, Obamacare, should be repealed in its entirety. If that's done, some very popular provisions of that law would be eliminated. The right to have children covered through their parents' policy through age 26, gone. The provision that says you can no longer deny coverage because of a pre-existing condition, gone. If you keep just provisions like that, the fear is that health insurance rates will skyrocket for everybody. Are you willing to accept that outcome? If not, what is your alternative plan, Lee Terry?
Well, thank you. And I had an alternative to Obamacare, and it modeled the federal employees' health care plan because it really has some great attributes to it, like choice. You get a booklet that says, here are your options. Then, based on your needs, you pick a plan. Also like that is, federal employee, government pays about 60% of the premium. Well, the same concept can be used, called premium support. So those of lower income can still have 100% of their premium paid like they do in Medicaid, and then a sliding scale. And then it's much more manageable, and it's still private sector, it's still competition. But I want to say one quick thing about Obamacare. If the Supreme Court just wipes out the mandate portion of this, we have a huge mess, because then you have pre-existing injuries that have to be covered with mandatory coverage. And so all you have to do is drive your car up the tree or the pole, and they have to cover you then.
Brett Lindstrom.
Well, if the Supreme Court does not overturn this, which I hope that they do in a 5-4 split or 6-3 split, I will work to repeal Obamacare. I think there's a couple of different things that need to happen in replace of that. Portability. If you go to your certain employer, you like that model, you should be able to take that to your next employer. We've gotten so far away from the doctor-patient relationship, we need to get back to that. Now it's more of an insurance-doctor relationship. Those doctors and that patient can make the best decisions for themselves and their future. Going back to the pharmaceuticals, currently right now Europe pays 1/10. Canada pays 1/6. We send our drugs and buy them back from Canada. And that's not right.
Glenn Freeman.
Obamacare is unconstitutional. That's all you need to say. The entire thing is unconstitutional. Ladies and gentlemen, the only way to solve this problem is through competition. You may laugh at that, but let me tell you. Every Sunday morning you get a paper, you look at it, and see how many automobiles are on sale. Just see that. And you can tell by that. You can check a choice. What has happened is you go to the hospital, you get there, they charge you $5 or $10 for a box of napkins. Maybe my wife doesn't want a box of napkins. So competition is the only way to resolve the issue of health care.
Jack Heidel.
I agree with Mr. Freeman on this one. The problem with Obamacare is that there's no cost control in it, and we need cost control. Health care in general, not only Medicare and Medicaid, but healthcare in general is just extremely expensive and getting more expensive, of course, because people are living longer and medical science is improving and so on and so forth. So we've got to get costs. We've got to get healthcare in general, private healthcare, under control. The cost. Okay, the way to do this is to remove the tax exemption from employer-provided healthcare and with an offsetting tax credit, because that way, employees would have an incentive to hold down their own costs, and that's what is needed.
30-second responses, Lee Terry.
Yeah, there's really not a response, but I do want to tell people that, boy, I fought pretty hard against Obamacare for a variety of different reasons. It didn't lower costs, but mostly it put government into the doctor's rooms with you, where government would help to me make the decisions, as we learned with the Catholic Church and the edict from the Obama administration. I have voted 3 times to repeal it, and if the Supreme Court doesn't do its job, then Congress has to take care of it, and I'm the only one up here that has the experience in fighting this.
Brett Lindstrom.
Certainly we need to be competitive. That's how the free market works, and so I'll work to do that. The problem I have with the Obamacare is the individual mandate. It's a mandate. It's a slippery slope when the federal government starts to dictate what you can and cannot purchase. So in Washington, I will fight tooth and nail in any mandate that ever comes across my desk to repeal that and not let that pass.
Glenn Freeman?
Yes, I disagree with what Mr. Terry said about him being the only one here. I worked for Senator Chuck Hagel for 12 years. The bill that Senator Hagel has, Veterans Preference Bill, that's my bill. That's my bill. So when Mr. Terry said he's the only one, he's mistaken. He's not the only one that knows how to do it.
Jack Heidel.
Let me give another benefit of changing the way health care is protected by or paid for by the tax code. If we repeal the tax credit for health care, then everyone is treated equally. In other words, people who are self-employed will get this be treated equally to people who are employees of a company and are getting tax-free health care. And by this is not only more fair, but it will help entrepreneurs who are starting new businesses, because they will get the same benefit as everyone else.
We're down to our last question here. I wish we had more time. So many candidates. We've got a lot of questions we have not been able to ask, unfortunately. Last question. The order is Brett Lindstrom, Glenn Freeman, Jack Heidel, and Lee Terry. The question is, what is your top priority if elected to Congress here in the 2nd District? Brett Lindstrom?
Well, there's 3 things that I'd like to accomplish. One would be ending the debt and the spending, currently at 15.6% and climbing. protecting Social Security for our retirees, people who are about to retire, maintain that for future generations by getting it out of the general fund and protect it for the future generations. The third thing would be to reform the corporate tax code, currently at 35%. Like I said before, we need to be competitive globally. And those are the three things that I want to tackle if hopefully Obamacare gets repealed by the Supreme Court. But that would be the first thing, and then those other three.
Glenn Freeman.
As I said at my announcement when I announced the candidate for this office, I said that I was going to represent the people of the 2nd District with the Constitution. The first thing I would do is introduce a bill, which is already in Washington, that every single law would cite the constitutional reference. That's the best thing that I can do for you. And if I did that for you, you would notice a difference, not only in the 2nd District, but you would know the difference in this country. And you would be not suffering the chaos that we have in this country now. Immigration is a big problem. It's not a problem at all. The debt and the deficit is not a problem. We do not have the will in Washington, D.C. to correct it. Mr. Terry has had 14 years and has done absolutely nothing about it.
Jack Hyden.
To challenge an incumbent in a primary is obviously very formidable, and I'm doing it really for just one reason. It's because of our national debt and the deficits, $1 trillion deficits, which are adding to it. And we simply need new leadership in Congress, more people who are absolutely focused and serious about eliminating the deficit. So that's the reason I'm running, and as a non-ideological fiscal conservative, I am willing and able and interested in working with all parties, all people in who are interested in both parties to address this very, very urgent problem. This is my sole focus. Lots of things are related to this. It will. Lots of other things will be, you know, how we're going to cut back and how that affects lots of different programs. But the main thing is to get the deficit reduced, shrunk down rapidly, ideally to zero, but we simply have to get away from these enormous deficits that are eating us alive.
Lee Terry.
Thank you. My first, first of all, it would please Glenn to know that that bill was passed and it's in law, and that's what we do with every bill. That was passed the first month that Republicans in the House took back the House. I would like to quit spending money we don't have. That has to be our first priority. Secondly, we do need to make our tax code fairer and simpler, which will make our businesses more competitive globally. Having them grow will help our economy grow. The last part will be energy. We need to use our own natural resources. We need to diversify our fuel so we don't have to spend $1 billion a day buying foreign oil, which is one of the key components or reasons behind my support of the XL Keystone Pipeline and fighting so hard for it. Mr. Lindstrom opposed that, and his press release sounded like it came from the Democratic Party. It was written by, I think, Bold Nebraska, with all of their accusations. In fact, the president's Podesta sounded just like his press release on Keystone XL Pipeline.
30-second responses. Brett Lindstrom?
My number one goal is to represent the Nebraskans. And I talked to a lot of farmers, I talked to a lot of ranchers who did not want that Keystone Pipeline running through the aquifer. It's one of our most greatest natural resources in Nebraska. Now, what I did say is I did want the Trans-Canada Pipeline, but I wanted to reroute it around the aquifer. Trans-Canada has given you $1,000 in money. So I don't know. And no, if you looked at the original, it's the straightest line through the aquifer, which tells me that is the most cost-effective for Trans-Canada, not right. Nebraska.
Glenn Freeman?
Yes, and Mr. Terry, he continued to tout this XL Pipeline, and all that was a political move. The Lincoln Journal Star, January the 20th, chastised him for getting involved in that. Mr. Terry has no part in that. The House of Representatives has no part. The President of the United States, through the Secretary of State, gives the license. The state gives permission. That's the way it works. Now, I want you to think about this also, and I'll hang around for a while, because I want you to think that you have a Congress when 56% of the people said they didn't want health care, but you got it anyway. Think about it.
Jack Hyden?
If we're going to eliminate the deficit, we've got to do two things. First of all, we have to cut spending, of course, to bring down expenses. Then we also need to increase revenue. And the way we're going to increase revenue, the best way to do it is not with artificial deficit spending, but by reforming the tax code to have the lowest possible rate that will give businesses the incentive they need to expand and grow. And that will boost the economy and therefore bring in more tax revenue. So lower spending, increase revenue by stimulating business, stimulating the economy. That's the way to eliminate the deficit.
Lee Terry.
If we're going to have energy and energy independence, folks, we're going to need energy infrastructure. And let me read Mr. Lindstrom's press release that really does look like the Podesta memo. By the way, Podesta is President Obama's campaign manager. But just the last sentence is, and realize that pushing the Keystone XL pipeline is both bad policy and bad politics. If you've changed your position, then I'll accept that.
I think that we need to make sure that oil stays here domestically. There's no guarantees in that Keystone pipeline that it's going to be used domestically.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to close it down. Round of applause for these candidates. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. A few thank yous are in order. Thank you, Cox Communications, for recording the entire debate and making it available through Cox's on-demand service, and KIOS Public Radio, which has also recorded the debate for airing over the noon hour on KIOS. Thanks to the League of Women Voters for co-sponsoring this debate.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard the second of two special programs presenting debates between the candidates running for nomination to the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District in the primary election on Tuesday, May 15th. Today's program has featured a debate between the four Republican candidates who had filed for the office at the time the debate invitations were extended. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, April 20th, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The participants in today's debate have been the former chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party and president of the Omaha Chapter Freedoms Foundation, Glenn Freeman, chairman of the Department of Mathematics at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and elected member of the Learning Community Coordinating Council, Jack Heidel, the current congressman from Nebraska's 2nd District, seeking his 7th term in the House of Representatives, Lee Terry, and Omaha financial advisor and former football player for the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, Brett Lindstrom. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee, as well as the Omaha League of Women Voters for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, May 17th at 12 noon. At that time, the topic, Child Welfare in Nebraska, Some Big Changes, will be discussed by Nebraska State Senator Kathy Campbell, Chairwoman of the Health and Human Services Committee, and Carolyn Rooker, Executive Director of Voices for Children in Nebraska. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Next Tuesday, May 15th, the primary election will take place in the state of Nebraska. Nebraska voters will select the candidates for President, Senate, and House of Representatives, which will appear on the ballot in the November 6th general election. Now that you've heard the candidates in these two debates, it is your duty and responsibility as a citizen of Nebraska and of the United States to cast your ballot next Tuesday and on November 6th. Don't miss your chance to be counted. Go to the polls next Tuesday and vote. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.